All right, we're right back with you, and glad to have you along tonight. A lot of information coming your way this hour. Ever since Cliff Mickelson submitted the paper, which I think really laid it out as brilliantly as anyone ever has in terms of the CDC, U.S. government involvement, and it is an involvement in the Morgellons catastrophe, and it is a catastrophe for those people who have it. And for many who have it and don't know it, it's a catastrophe in waiting. Cliff wrote a story called CDC Kaiser, Groundbreaking Morgellons Study of Fraud, January 19th of this year. A fraud indeed it is. It is a joke. And I would urge all of you to go to the Morgellons data page on the left-hand side of my homepage and read that story. It's right there. And if any of you have missed any of the special programs we've done, they are all there for you to listen free anytime you'd like. The most recent was with Cliff Mickelson and Jan Smith, both great friends of ours and yours. And they are just amazing people. So when you go through the list of programs, they were on the 1st, and they were actually together on the 12th, which is the most recent we have done. So all those programs there for you to listen to anytime you'd like. I would urge all of you to do that when you can. And I hope you make yourself aware of it. And for those of you who have this issue, I'm sure you've heard them all. But listen to them again, because there's a lot of data there that that continues to sink in. New revelations every time I listen to one or two of them. With us tonight is Cliff Mickelson. He is just back from, I guess, a couple days ago, the first Morgellons Disease Medical Research Conference in Austin, Texas, held on March the 29th. And I wanted to ask Cliff, and I did ask Cliff, if he would be kind enough to spend some time and come on to the program with us and explain what happened down there. So let's welcome him back. Hi, Cliff. How are you?
I'm great, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be back again. Hope you're doing well out there.
Well, we're hanging in there, as they say. Now, ever since your paper was published at Rents.com, it made the rounds, and it did tell the whole story. I understand, a little bird named Lori told me, that there was not a single representative in evidence from the CDC at the Morgellons Conference in Austin. Did you happen to notice any?
Yes, Lori's absolutely correct, Jeff. There were no representatives of that august organization at the conference. Of course, that came as no surprise to us who know the real mindset of the Centers for Deceit and Corruption. I mean, the CDC.
That's kind of like the Food and Death Administration. Yeah.
Oh, we could play with that one, couldn't we?
Yeah.
But, there was no one there. And they may have had a few apologists salted into the crowd here and there, but they didn't have the moxie to show up and stand up and face the music, as it were, at that convention.
I am also told that no one from the CDC or any other federal organization has been in contact with Randy Wymore for at least 2 years. So,
that's correct. They've basically cut themselves off from all avenues of independent research, including the research that's being done by Vitaly Sitkovsky and by others like him. They have basically told the world that they're not interested in what anybody else has to tell them about this disease.
They're going to find out from Kaiser Permanente. That's how they're going to. $380,000. They're going to do it.
Yeah, that ought to pay the bus fare for a couple of them to go out there and find out what the results are.
For those of you who don't know about this, the feds know full well exactly what this is all about. They're playing games with people's lives, as they always do. This is an issue that is quite clear to people in certain positions of power and influence. We don't know exactly what it is, but we have some tremendous research underway, some great sacrifices by people. And we're learning more all the time. What came out of the conference, Cliff, in order of magnitudes of importance in your estimation?
The desperate need that we have for more funding in order to pursue the research that we really need to make this a successful endeavor, Jeff. It's, you know, in the United States of America, it boils down to one thing, and it's money. Unfortunately, we're in the belly of the beast. We have to play the game, and if we're going to find out anything more than just superficial of things that we already more or less know about this affliction, the name of the game is money. And it became painfully apparent that everyone there who's attempting to do research, and there's some good-hearted people that have devoted lots of their own time, lots of their own money, and it's just not enough.
Right. Agreed. Well, fat chance of getting money from the feds. They've spent $5 trillion killing people and decimating a country that used to be known as Iraq and much of Afghanistan, but they have no money for more Gillen's research. So.
Absolutely. If we had 5 minutes worth of the money that they're spending in Afghanistan
five
or
minutes.
Iraq, or even if 5 minutes worth of the money that they're spraying overhead, we would be way ahead of the game.
Heavy spray day in much of the Northwest yesterday, chemtrail spraying. Today, quite clear. So, I mean, it's so obscenely obvious what's going on with respect to chemtrails. It is a laugh if it weren't so deadly. Anyway,
Absolutely.
Okay. So, number one, no money and really no hope for money unless some private benefactor steps forward and decides to write a check. But other than that, we're pretty well high and dry. Go ahead.
We're pretty well high and dry, and you know, I hate to say that because it sounds so final and so desperate, but I think things will change because this affliction's spreading, Jeff. It's spreading with an amazing speed, a terrifying speed, actually, and sooner or later, the right people are going to come down with this, and when that happens, the money will begin flowing.
That's what it'll take. We've talked about this before. You're so right. If one of Bush's daughters gets it, there'll be money.
Absolutely. If the head of the CDC gets it, knock on wood, there'll be money.
Right. Okay. All right. So what kind of people were down there? All kinds?
Oh, yes. There was a very, very good cross-section of people. And on the bright side of all this, Jeff, we had a wonderful turnout. It was a positive group of people that showed up, a large group of people that showed up in relation to other past events. It was a full house. They were very attentive, very positive, just a lot of activist people, and their energy level was high. It just seemed to be a conference that was that took place under the right stars.
Great. All right. Anything new from Randy Wymore?
Well, actually, there was nothing that I would personally say is groundbreaking revelation.
In any category. In other words, okay.
Yeah, in any category, Jeff, from nobody. None of the researchers who presented their information really presented us with anything that we didn't already know.
Got it.
Once again, they're kind of up against a wall financially as well.
Sure. Well, this is what I frankly expected. I mean, we've talked. I talked to Jan Smith all the time, and if something's going to break, you or Jan will know about it probably as early as anyone other than the researcher involved.
Yes.
It's just that way. That's not to say that others aren't trying hard, but we need to really honor you and Jan for your sacrifices over the years. For those of you who don't know, Jan and Cliff have both had Morgellons for over 10 years. They are two of my favorite human beings on the planet. They're heroes and the best and most magnificent connotation of that term. They live with a crippling, debilitating, massively frustrating and disheartening, if not spirit-breaking, disease, disorder, affliction, infestation, parasitization. We don't know what it is, but it is ruthless. It doesn't slow down. And as Cliff said, it is spreading rapidly. Why is it spreading rapidly, Cliff Mickelson, in your estimation? Now, that brings us down to vectors, of course. What is pushing it? What's driving it?
Just human contact? Yes. Of course, that's an issue of some debate, and that issue was addressed at the conference as well. Ginger Savely, in particular, felt that there is no person-to-person communication. However, I disagree with that. She feels that it's more environmental to person, which I agree that it's that takes place as well. I believe this thing's vectoring itself, Jeff, in a wide variety of
mm-hmm.
manners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I concur completely. I don't know how you could rule anything out at this point.
Right.
We have talk about there is confusion, and let's try and clear a little bit of this up. It's called a nanotechnology affliction. It's a nano device. And so when people look at magnifications of fibers and the gristle and the other formations that these lesions emit or otherwise give up, they say it can't be nano because we can see it. Nanotechnology is one molecule made by atoms at that level. You can't see it. Well, what you can see are the results of those little engines that are self-replicating, self-assembling, and continue to crank out these fibers and other things. So it is, in fact, most probably sourced in a nanotechnology paradigm. And we'll come right back and talk with Cliff more about that in a couple of minutes. I would direct you again, kindly, to the left-hand side of my homepage under the Morgellons fiber picture. You'll see six different categories, five to be exact. And I would urge all of you to take a look at those if you know nothing about this. Information and knowledge is crucial. The more of you that understand what this is, the more actually cases we're going to discover are out there, and the more information we can pull together, which is crucial and underlies all successful research, because we are going to have to do it as a public. We'll be back. Okay, back with Cliff Nicholson. There are many theories about Morgellons disease. What are these things? What are these fibers? What are the other formations? What's causing them to grow and proliferate and be vectored person to person and environmentally to people? It is spreading. There's no question about that. It does appear to be subclinical in some for a period of time. We don't know whether it starts on the outside and goes in or works its way inside and then out to the skin. It is certainly a misnomer to call Morgellons a skin disorder and disease, is it not, Cliff?
Absolutely, Jeff. It is absolutely a misnomer. This thing is much more than that.
We have, unfortunately, not been able to come up, to my knowledge, with any solid autopsy information or scientific data on anyone deceased who has had Morgellons. Do you know of any data?
Well, actually, no, there isn't, although we do have several deceased that we can cite.
There have been no autopsies or clinical analysis and true toxicology of their tissues to find out if these fibers and other Morgellons symptomatic material are, in fact, throughout the body. We believe that to be the case, but we don't know. And I've heard stories that Morgellons deceased are not autopsied under some suspicious circumstances.
Absolutely. In fact, Dr. Wymore, had an experience along those very same lines. There was a death, I believe, about a year and a half ago involving a Morgellons patient, and Dr. Wymore attempted to get permission to do the autopsy or to be present at the autopsy,
right,
and to get samples from the victim. He was flatly denied. The autopsy was never done. The victim was buried post-haste, and that seems to be the standard run-of-the-mill thing that we encounter.
And if the victim is cremated, that isn't going to do much either, because the temperatures in the crematories are not high enough to destroy these fibers. We know they can do pretty well up to 1,400 degrees. That's the point which they start to manifest obvious overt signs of damage from the heat. So if they're incinerated at 500, 600, 700, 800 degrees, chances are these nanotechnologically derived fibers and so forth are going to be spewed right up and out the chimney.
In one form or another, that's correct. It'd be real similar to what we experience with prions.
Right. And prions can withstand 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. We know that.
Right.
There are theories about what Morgellons is, and I'm wondering, let me run over just a couple of them and see if any others were presented at the conference. Some hold that nanotechnology was used, again, atom by atom, to build molecules, to build organisms used in the field, what they call bioremediation, primarily for use to treat sewage sludge. They call them bacteria, if you will, but they're little nanomachines that are supposed to break down sewage sludge. That's one theory. There are people who have worked at wastewater treatment plants, and terrible, deplorable, appalling conditions that literally throw their safety to the wind. They have all, many of them in some cases, become infested with Morgellons. There are others who suggest that there were nanotechnologically derived organisms, devices to use in the oil industry to plug leaks in earthen dikes and other barriers that need to hold water back. They were able to inject them into the holes, and the nanomachines would replicate, fill up the cracks and stop the leaking. Some others suggest that genetic material from Lyme disease was inserted into the bioremediation organisms for some reason. And that's why many Morgellons victims test positive for Lyme. Those are three. I don't know how many more there may be, but did you hear any? You concur with those, I believe. And did you hear of anything else at the conference?
Well, actually, you've covered, done a pretty good job there of covering the nano field. And there were no representatives of the nano field there at the conference.
Big surprise.
I wish there would have been.
Let me say one thing. Excuse me. I got to jump in here with it because you raised a point. I had someone who came on the program. I'm not going to mention any names. For several years, a truly brilliant man in the field of nanotechnology, Cliff. And the first time I emailed this man and asked him if he would come on and discuss the Morgellons issue was, I think, the last time I ever heard from him.
Really?
I got, I believe, one email after that, many, many, many months later, but he would not touch it, which sent off a red flare right away in my book that there's
right.
a lid on this thing.
Well, of course, as we both know, the whole nanotechnology issue is one that the general public has very little idea of about as to where it's going, where it's actually already been, how far along the technology is. And in the Morgellons community itself, there's a rather sharp schism between those who believe that particular school, or subscribe to that school, I should say, and those who don't. I would say that I felt it was very unfortunate that at this conference there were no representatives of that particular school of thought as to the theories of what is the cause of Morgellons who were represented, because there is a lot of there's a lot of dirt under the carpet in the nanotechnology field.
There is. Stand by, Cliff. We have to take a break. There is an enormous amount of dirt under the carpet. There is It's a very wicked business, nanotechnology. Let me leave it at that. There is so much going on in this field in terms of research and development for the military, which always gets its hands on all new technological breakthroughs first. This thing is out of control. Scientists have called for oversight. Scientists from all over the world have called for oversight. But you'll not see it. It is running amok. Nanotechnology. Out of control. Back in a minute. Okay, and we're back talking to Cliff Mickelson, updating you on the Morgellons. I hate to call it a disease, but it is a dis-ease, without question. The nanotechnological aspect of it means, obviously, very small genesis, easier to transmit. In its full-blown, mature configuration, we see the fibers. You've all seen the photographs. If you haven't, go take a look at them. They're on the Internet. Which leads, of course, I think, back to the big question, Cliff. These Morgellons' physical entities of several different types and configurations are, in all probability, in the bloodstream, in the major organ systems of the body, in the neurological system of the body, in the brain, and work their way to the skin as maybe a stage, maybe not, maybe just part and parcel of a thorough systemic penetration. They just happen to show up at the skin. We don't know. What are your thoughts on that at this point?
I think you put it very well, Jeff. I think a thorough systemic penetration would be the most apt description of this thing. Thorough. It's just hard to imagine, those who aren't familiar out there, the listeners who haven't really seen a case of this, how it functions in the body. It permeates everywhere. It's coming out everywhere. It can be found in the respiratory tract, in the digestive tract, as well as in the internal organs. If we can get an autopsy, a decent autopsy, I think we're going to find things that will just
shock.
Horrify everyone.
Shock and horrify, you bet. And I think that's why the lid is being kept on this. The feds, of course, have a complete database on everyone who has this. To their knowledge, they monitor the Internet, they monitor the Morgellons chat rooms, the the blogs and so forth, they know. And when someone dies, there are evidences now and indications of federal intervention, as you've heard us discuss already. The issue of the fibers moving is particularly frightening to people. There are videotapes on the Internet. Jan Smith has made them available. I personally have seen them move under microscopic research conditions. It is really something to see. These are not inert objects. They move. And if they're in the bloodstream, in any one of a number of different configurations, they're moving around the body. Now, we do know they tend to aggregate, if not coalesce, in the skin. They'll come out in clumps. That's where most of our photographic evidence comes from. But if this is the case in a systemic platform, in a systemic venue, Cliff Mickelson, what is to cause or prevent these issues from agglutinating to the extent that they could cause poor circulation, strokes, heart attacks, blocked liver ducts, blocked capillaries, blocked arteries in time, blocked veins, blocked all kinds of body systems? What's to prevent?
Yes.
Nothing.
Nothing whatsoever, Jeff. And also, I might mention the lymph system is another candidate for penetration.
Yeah.
We've also, and this is very, very fascinating to me, and I just wish that we had more studies on this, but there is increasing amount of evidence, and Jan Smith has provided us with some, that this thing gets down into the bone marrow. It actually penetrates into the bone marrow, and I've had several people at this conference, in fact, were aware of the Star Child and the penetration of similar seeming fibers in those samples. And I believe that this particular affliction is doing the same similar thing in the bone marrow.
Well, that's interesting. I've known Lloyd for many, many years. I know all about that project. It has to do with an old skull which doesn't match any normal human bone configuration when it comes to skull and such. You can find information on the Internet. All right. Now, the diagnosis issue. Here's someone with itchy skin. But as you well know, Cliff, and all of you who have it listening, it's not just itchy skin. You go to a dermatologist. You go to a doctor. It's still pretty grim. Is there any evidence that the medical community is at least endeavoring to tell patients that, hey, we don't know what it is, rather than give them a DOP or some other kind of thing, scabies or some contact or other dermatitis or dermatosis? I mean, this has got to stop at some point.
Yes, it does have to stop. Absolutely, Jeff. But what we're running into, of course, is basically ignorance and a medical profession that's crippled by its own training. The secret here is just a slow and ongoing and tenacious program of education in the face of hostile ignorance, and we just have to keep at it. And I believe we're making some progress.
And you know who has to do the educating, dear friends? You who have Morgellons. The burden is really on your shoulders to a very large degree. Don't look to the feds. You're going to have to educate
Absolutely.
Your doctors. You're going to have to print out Jan Smith's paper, Living with a Nightmare, Cliff's paper. Take them to your doctor and say, here, look at the pictures. Read the data. Understand when you get people in your practice as a dermatologist or as a GP or whatever, and you have skin conditions that you don't understand, consider this. Don't send them away and tell them they're crazy. Don't do that anymore. So it's really up to us to take this issue right now and run with it. We have to.
Yes, that's absolutely true, and we need to be somewhat militant about it because time is of the essence here, and we're actually doing the world a favor by insisting that this issue be addressed properly.
There are also, unfortunately, and it is always the case, there are people who are using the Internet to market cures. If anyone tells you they can cure Morgellons, they're lying, all right? If anyone tells you they might have something that might alleviate some of the symptoms, some of the discomfort, you might want to pay attention to that. But people who promise cures, I think, Cliff, I can't speak for you, but for me, I find that rather repulsive.
I'll go on record with you with that, Jeff. And I would just like to reinforce what you just said. There is a host of snake oil people out there ready and willing to take advantage of the suffering of others, and not only with the Lyme community, but with some of the other more exotic afflictions that are currently surfacing.
Oh, yeah. The exclusive realm of Morgellons patients. Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. So it's caveat emptor, as they say. But there are some things out there that will provide relief to sufferers. So as you said, there's a big difference between those who claim a cure and those who say, well, maybe this will give you some relief.
Right. And if someone's going to charge you a lot of money, think it over.
That's the first red flag.
All right. Back in just a minute with Cliff Mickelson as we get our latest update on the burgeoning infestation of the human species with Morgellons, which has been found now on 7 continents. I'm back with Cliff Mickelson, and I would urge you to read Cliff's material at Rents.com and on Morgellons section and Jan's brilliant paper, Living with a Nightmare. All right, there are MDs out there who have prescribed, I think, in good faith and good conscience, not knowing any better, heavy regimens of antibiotics to try to address this, not knowing really what it was. That can be very, very damaging to a person's entire health. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm saying beware of the side effects of any heavy regimen of antibiotics. Cliff, what do you have to say about that?
I agree with you 100% on that, and it does seem to be, of course, you've got to realize that a lot of these physicians, and bless their hearts, I mean, the ones that have actually stepped out and tried to get involved in the Morgellons issue and said, you know, we want to do what we can to help, they're still somewhat handicapped by the very nature of their own training. And all they really know to do is throw things at a patient like Bioxin and Cipro and Doxy, and then I've got some of them are even combining that with Flagyl, which is an antiparasitic, and then topping off the mix with other things such as ivermectin.
You mean to tell me that they're prescribing those all together at the same time, simultaneously?
Well, yes, they are, and that did raise some eyebrows among some of us, to say the least. And of course, they're prescribing some very aggressive regimens, and they're claiming to get some results. But the question is, are you going to kill the patient with the cure? I just really have issues with all that, Jeff. I can't really buy into that.
Cipro and Doxy at the same time with Flagyl, which is a very powerful antiparasitic. Ivermectin, another one used to treat mites and scabies and things. I don't know. This is nanotechnology, friends. These are not bacteria. They are not viruses. They are not little bugs, parasites crawling around like scabies. This is a whole different thing. When you have something that comes out in a fiber form and withstands temperatures of up to 1,400 degrees, you have to rethink the whole paradigm. Excuse me, Cliff, go ahead.
Yes, well, I'm right on the same page with you there, because what I would like to say on that is that I've known a number of people, including my good friend Jan Smith and several others, who have been taking massive doses of these medications for long periods of time. And you get some remission, but you never get a cure. In the meantime, what you need to ask yourself is what's going on with the rest of your body? What are these compounds doing to you? They're actually, in effect, I think, over a period of time, going to enable the onslaught of this affliction because they further reduce your ability to resist.
How can they not? How can they not when they wipe out your digestive bacteria, your immune system goes down? They just wreak havoc on the body over time. Taking these for a year or two or three, I don't think can do anything but make the body weaker and certainly a bigger playground for these little machines or whatever they are.
Right. And what we've got here, Jeff, with this kind of a DX that's being pushed onto the Morgellons patients is an attempt by physicians who have no other tools because of the fact, and they have no other knowledge, they're basically just throwing their book at the elephant and hoping it doesn't turn around and sit on them because they don't even understand the nature of the elephant. And that's the bottom line. We don't know what the heck it is we've got on our hands. And until we do find that out, we're going to have what in, you know, these kinds of misdiagnoses, and it's just really a sad situation.
It is. Now, people have tried topical, and remember, this is a systemic disorder, a systemic affliction. It's not a skin disease, but people have tried cortisone creams, topical anesthetics, all kinds of things. What are some of the simple things which seem to give some relief at the skin level that you've heard about, Cliff?
Well, I can say that I've heard of a number of things that actually work pretty well, and I've used some of them myself. People are fond of taking salt baths. That gives temporary relief. A selenium sulfide solution is commonly found in things like Selsun Blue. If you use that in your bath water, that will give you relief. All of it temporary, of course. There are vinegar baths.
Like from hours to a day or two, and then it's a short-term, short-fuse thing.
Short-term, yes. Short-term, within a day. Mm-hmm. Usually a day at the most. There's a number of other things. People take baths in baking soda, and it's basically those kinds of things. And they soothe the skin, aloe vera, things like that, but nothing cures it. Sulfur compounds seem to have a real interesting effect, and I would like to see more research done on what that stuff does.
Right. When people talk about their skin feeling as if it's crawling, well, quite literally, that's what's happening. And it is a question of these fibers being at the subdermal layer and working their way upward, but they certainly crawl. They literally move around through the body, and it is, for those who have this affliction, literally a living nightmare, as Jan Smith's paper is entitled. It is a feeling that you just, I guess, can't even imagine unless you have it. How do you describe that to somebody?
You know, you just can't. And that's about the best you can do. Vocabulary fails us at this point. In fact, vocabulary fails us in a lot of ways when it comes to describing this affliction. We just don't have the words to describe what this thing does. It's so novel. It's so unusual that the language hasn't caught up with it yet.
Some people try to look into the past and history and say that, Morgellons has been around for hundreds of years. I completely disagree with that for a number of reasons, that is part of the landscape out there.
Yeah, you hear that. I don't buy it. This thing really came on strong in the 90s. I've heard people, there's a few very rare cases where people will claim, well, I've had this since I was 10 years old and I'm 60. I've had this since 1975. But maybe on one hand, you can list those people on one hand, and we don't really know for sure if they're correct or not. But most of these cases started showing up in the late 90s.
That's right. That's right. And interestingly enough, chemtrails started showing up right around 1996. Now, that leads me to my next question. Was there anything at the convention which continued to try to tie the two together in any fashion?
Well, not exceptionally. Dr. Stricker, he did mention chemtrails as one of the potential causes. Which I was pleased to see he did that. But that was really about it. Most of the rest of the people at the convention stayed away from that subject.
All right. Much talk about the wastewater treatment issue, plumbers, people standing in irrigation water. As a medium for this stuff to live in, obviously it can live almost anywhere. People who have it report that their homes, any horizontal surface over a period of time, 6 months to a year, will show fibers where they weren't before. In other words, they're proliferating on their own somehow, as if feeding on mineral content in the air.
Right. As a matter of fact, I've got a little anecdote,
anecdote.
A little story to tell. Yeah, thank you. A little anecdote to tell you here. When I checked into my hotel in Austin, the first thing I did was get out my jeweler's loop and check out the room just on a lark. And lo and behold, Jeff, there they were in
corners. You're kidding.
Yeah, it was right there in my hotel room.
On the floor?
Around the electrical switch boxes, in the corners of the molding, everywhere that hadn't been dusted or cleaned, I found them.
Colored?
Colored, black, red, and blue. Big as life.
Oh, this is not good.
The
potential for this affliction to spread worldwide, I hope, is obvious to all of you listening. These fibers don't go away. And if you wonder, well, how can they live out of the air? Many people think that trees, for example, derive their mineral nutrition from the soil. Not true. Trees pull something like 90% or better of their mineral content from the air. And if you don't believe me, do the research. This was a remarkable story. They're minute amounts, but it's there. So these things apparently have a means of replicating by using, I would suggest, potentially mineral content in the air itself.
Yes, that's a real interesting subject right there, and one that I'd love to explore further at another time, because there's a lot to that. I've, of course, as you probably already are aware, I've pulled these things out of sticky traps that I used to post around, and you'll even find them in spider webs now and then.
So they're just kind of blowing in the wind, as the song lyrics go.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we have just a minute left, Cliff. What do you want to do to wrap this visit up?
Well, I would just like to say that, first of all, the convention in Austin was overall, in my estimation, a success, because it showed that there's strength in numbers and the community did come together. There's still a lot of problems, a lot of ideological divides that need to be overcome. But we all need to pull together, Jeff, and we're all in this together, and the petty differences will pale in comparison to what the potential for this affliction, for the damage that it can do to all of us.
Are you hearing more and more about mental and emotional problems from people who become afflicted?
All the time. And that, in fact, that issue was addressed at the conference. And it's an issue that people need to understand, that it's not unlike a host of other diseases. You've got syphilis, which creates mental issues. You've got Lyme disease, which creates mental issues, and the list goes on. This also has that capability, and it exercises it with a vengeance.
And, we need to stress the word militancy. We've got to educate the medical community ourselves, and I would urge you to avail yourselves of all the material at my website any way you'd like to, and help your doctor understand what this is. Cliff, thank you again, sir. I salute you. You're a great friend and a fellow American, and I'm glad to have you on anytime.
My pleasure, Jeff. It's good talking with you again.
Take care. Good night.
Bye-bye.
And to Jan Smith and all the others out there who are, we're all pulling together on this, take care. And that's our program tonight. We'll be back in 21 hours.